The Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, also known as the IPC report, was launched on Monday. This is a key government and United Nations publication critical in determining future of the country's food security.
And one of the key highlights is this report is a call for sustained assistance to control hunger in the country. The United Kingdom, through the Department for International Development, remains a major donor in support of South Sudan's humanitarian needs. DFID's head of office in Juba, Bex Buckingham, and Nicola Mure, head of humanitarian, join us this morning to tell us more. Good morning, ladies, Nicola and Bex.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Yes. And Bex, what are your initial thoughts about the latest IPC report in terms of the 7 million people facing risk of starvation?
Well, the latest IPC report highlights the appalling situation in South Sudan, as well as the ongoing suffering of its people. In January this year, 5.3 million people are estimated to be severely food insecure. This includes 1 million people on the edge of famine. Compared with the same time last year, this is a 40% increase in the population facing severe food insecurity in this post-harvest season. This makes large parts of the population of South Sudan incredibly vulnerable.
Yes, and the report states that up to 1 million people are facing acute food insecurity. Could this have been averted?
Yeah, it absolutely could. This is a man-made crisis. Years of conflict and fighting have led to insecurity and huge levels of displacement, and this has contributed to reduced crop production. You know, if conflict is happening, people cannot harvest, they cannot plant. They keep moving. Every time they think they've managed to plant something, they're then moved on somewhere else.
Right. And Nicola, the chairperson of the National Bureau of Statistics, has also said that peace and a massive humanitarian intervention is needed to avert a potential catastrophe. Yet some people still argue that humanitarian intervention is a mindset and not a formula. What lessons has the DFID learned from its support in South Sudan?
Absolutely. I was at the launch event on Monday where the chairperson for the National Bureau of Statistics highlighted these issues, and he expressed himself very articulately. And I completely agree with him that ultimately peace is really the solution to the humanitarian situation in South Sudan. But in terms of what we've learned supporting humanitarian assistance here in South Sudan, really the importance of flexible and adaptive programming. You need to be able to work with communities on strengthening resilience where that's possible, but it's not possible in all contexts. So really having predictable, multi-year, flexible programming in humanitarian contexts where we can adapt between different approaches is really important.
Yes, and should South Sudan be hopeful that donor agencies such as the DFID can step in to avert a possible catastrophe or famine in the country?
So ultimately, the government of South Sudan is responsible for the suffering of its people. However, organisations such as UK and other humanitarian agencies, we're absolutely here to support the humanitarian response. In fact, our South Sudan programme, our humanitarian programme, is one of our largest bilateral emergency responses. And I know this is a priority also for US and EU colleagues. But with multiple crises across the world and limited resources, organisations like DFID do have to make really difficult decisions about where to focus our humanitarian need. So it's not just about more funding, it's also about how we fund. So we need to find ways of increasing efficiency and effectiveness of what we do, whether that's more innovative approaches to logistics to get assistance to those most in need, or thinking about biometrics and registrations of beneficiaries so we're really targeting the right people. So it's both about more assistance but also assistance that really reaches those that need it.
Right, Nicola, still with you here. South Sudan is one of the largest recipients of the UK funding through DFID. What exactly is DFID's commitment to South Sudan, and how much are you committing to the humanitarian support?
Perhaps I'll start off in terms of the humanitarian side of the house and Bex can speak to the wider portfolio. DFID South Sudan, back in 2015, innovated with a new funding approach here. We instituted a new five-year programme, so from 2015 to 2020, a multi-year humanitarian programme for just under half £1 billion. And this was aimed at both resilience programming as well as emergency programming, and as I said before, makes this one of the largest humanitarian responses that DFID has running anywhere in the world.
Bex?
I think it's important to remember that since 2015, we think we've probably reached around 2.4 million people with life-saving humanitarian assistance, such as emergency food, nutrition, health, shelter, water, hygiene and sanitation. And we've also reached over 187,000 vulnerable people with livelihood support to strengthen their resilience to cope. But the cost of the conflict has just also driven an economic crisis. And this is exasperating the situation by pushing up the cost of food for families. And I have to say, the only solution to this, whilst the UK will stand by our commitment, but the only solution is peace. The government of South Sudan are the ones that are responsible for alleviating the suffering of its people. They and all other parties to the conflict must stop the violence and the human rights abuses that have become the hallmark of this conflict.
Yes, and humanitarian issues aside, education and health are one of the DFID deliverables in South Sudan. What programme has provided great success stories?
Well, the UK has stood firm and continued to provide both health and education, and working really closely with the ministries of health and education. In health, we're the lead donor to the Health Pooled Fund, but that means we also have the US, Canada, Sweden and the EU who are also participating. The UK are leading the delivery of it. And through this, we support over 1,000 frontline health centres to improve access to quality health services, including preventing the spread of disease through routine immunisations. We also have the Girls Education Programme. Now, this doesn't just meet the needs of girls. Mm-hmm. The Girls Education Programme provides cash transfers to girls, but it also provides cash grants to schools, which enable boys to go to school. And one of the things I've always said is that no matter what happens in a country, education is something you can never take away. Once a child has received education, then, you know, it's there forever.
Yes, and is there a personal story that you could include here? I mean, when you meet like someone in school, something you'd like to share with us?
I think one of the most thrilling times for me was I went to one of the technical colleges in Juba. And the boys and girls there are studying what you might consider traditionally male subjects. Mm-hmm. Bricklaying, engineering, mechanical engineering, mechanics, fixing cars. And whilst talking to the young men there was brilliant, actually what was really exciting was talking to the young women who were saying, no, I want to be a mechanic, I want to be an engineer. Now, even in the UK, these are not subjects that traditionally you see a huge amount of women getting involved in.
Right.
So if there is anything we can do to spread that knowledge and encourage girls and boys to do the stuff that they love, then that's what we want to do.
Right. So last but not least, what for you remains the priorities of the UK government in South Sudan?
The UK is absolutely focused on bringing peace in South Sudan and alleviating the suffering of the South Sudan people. And we do this, what we call the three Ds, diplomacy, defence and development. In diplomacy, you'll have heard from the chargé d'affaires on more than one occasion, as well as Chris Trott, our special envoy to the Sudans, and working alongside our Troika partners to really support the regional-led peace process. And we will continue to focus our attention on the upcoming round of the Higher Level Revitalization Forum. You'll also know from a defence perspective, we have nearly 400 British troops. This is our largest contribution to a UN mission. And they're up in Malakal and Bentu and here in Juba, providing vital engineering and medical assistance to the UN mission to help support the protection of civilians and also ensure that the other troop contributing nations have the right medical care in the areas where we are providing that particular service. And then while I've used the word development, we're much more about humanitarian aid and stabilisation than development here. But nonetheless, this is about working with UN partners and other NGOs to alleviate the suffering of the South Sudanese people. But ultimately, and your previous guests that you had on the show, I think probably ended on almost the same point. Mm-hmm. Without peace, suffering will increase and the consequences will endure for years to come.
Yes, and just finally, before you go, your personal final remarks on what we've been discussing. Let's begin with you, Nicole.
Yeah, I mean, I would just echo Bex's final point there, that it really is about peace. But while there is an ongoing set of humanitarian needs and the IPC report, the 5.3 million people severely food insecure, are a reminder that continuing emergency support and maintaining access to communities who are affected is incredibly important.
And finally, Bex.
You know, we've supported the people of South Sudan for many years, and we will continue to support them. But ultimately, the plea for peace comes from everyone that I speak to. Mm. Every beneficiary just wants to be able to live their life. And until peace comes, that's not going to be possible.